Welcome back to the course on Critical Theory, Cultural Studies, and Postmodern Theory, considered in terms of civil liberty. We are now at Lecture 10, the second part of a two-part lecture on deconstruction. So if you'll recall, we were talking about this epoch of the sign, or the epoch of metaphysics, or the epoch of the metaphysics of presence. And he's going now to say, Derrida, that is, that he does not recommend us to move on to something else from this epoch, from the epoch of the sign, because truth is merely a fact of writing, period. It has to be maintained for writing to occur. That is, for writing to occur, there is always posited this idea of truth, and writing presupposes this notion of truth. Whereas Derrida puts it, the signified has at any rate an immediate relationship with the logos in general, whether finite or infinite, and a mediated one with the signifier. That is to say, with the exteriority of writing. So the signified has an immediate relationship with, you might say, the referent here, which is logos, and with the signifier which represents it, or the which is the exteriority of writing, or the series of signifiers. Derrida opposes now the book, which is a totality where difference does not exist because it is total, to writing, which is all about difference. So now we're entering into a discussion of this epoch of writing, okay? Now, you might think of this idea of the book as a totality. You might look at the Bible, for example, and think of that. The Bible is deemed a totality where difference is not allowed because it represents the totality of God's revealed word. You can't add to it, and you can't subtract from it. Likewise, it doesn't permit difference with itself. He's saying this, in effect, about all books, if you will, or the book. It's a totality which doesn't allow difference, and writing is about difference. So writing should be opposed to this idea of a closed book as such. Writing is this new era where we're in, where difference is going to be everything. And this will lead us to his term difference, which he coined, which is a construal that means difference plus deferral, and we'll discuss that. Or as Derrida puts it, the idea of the book, which always refers to a natural totality, is profoundly alien to the sense of writing. It is the encyclopedic protection of theology and of logocentrism against the disruption of writing, against its aphoristic energy, and as I shall specify later, against difference in general. Okay, that's basically what I've explicated already. But there has to be a transcendental signifier for the difference between a signifier and signified to be somewhere absolute and irreducible. And here's my explication of that. That is, the fact of the signifiers and signified difference implies of something that there is the signified and that there is not the signifier. That is, it implies a difference between signifier and signified. It implies a transcendental signified. The difference between signifier and signified implies a transcendental signifier. The very split implies that there is this something that's transcendental to the signifier. Okay? This is the transcendental object of Kant's metaphysics, for example. Thus, Derrida has broken down the metaphysics of Western philosophy into terms of language. Okay, we've gone through that. The transcendental object is a function of the sign, of the signifier-signified relationship. The very idea of positing something that can't be reached as a transcendental object, as in Kant, is contingent upon this signifier-signified relationship. As Derrida puts it, It is not by chance that the thought of being as the thought of this transcendental signified is manifested above all in the voice and the language of words. But in the voice, the signifier is seemingly erased and produces an illusion of the identity of the signified and language. I said this before, that this idea that there was no distance between signifier and signified in the voice is really an illusion. It's only seemingly erased the signifier and collapsed into the signified. And this identity that is produced is only an illusion. Okay? Yet this erasure is only an illusion. In Derrida's words, this experience of the effacement of the signifier in the voice is not merely one illusion among many, since it is the condition of the very idea of truth. So the very idea of truth depends on this belief in the effacement of the signifier and the signified in the voice. But I shall elsewhere show in what it does delude itself. Emphasis mine. And the emphasis here is on that the voice is not merely, the effacement of the signifier in the voice is not merely one illusion among many. It is the condition of the very idea of truth. So this belief in truth comes from the idea that the signifier is effaced in the voice. So in the era of the, in the epoch of logos, it imports this idea of truth, which comes from the apparent erasure of the signifier, but it was always there. It is this experience that makes the idea of being itself possible. This idea, this experience of the erasure of the signifier in the voice makes the idea of being itself possible, this idea of a separation of being into itself as such. In Derrida's word, this experience is considered in its greatest purity and at the same time in the condition of its possibility as the experience of being. This is the experience of being. It comes in this experience of the voice, and it is the condition of the possibility of the experience of being. Being is thus tied to language, as he puts it. But as that sense is nothing outside of language, back here he is bringing in the signifier again, and the language of words, it is tied, if not to a particular word or to a particular system of language, at least to the possibility of the word in general. So being is tied to the word, or the possibility of the word. Being thus comes into being through language. Derrida asked us then whether this deconstruction of the word being doesn't already also deconstruct the ontology of being itself. So now we're getting the implication that not only is the signified coming into being through language, but maybe the referent, and this is the big question, I think, for the whole project. Inasmuch as the question of being unites indissolubly with the pre-comprehension of the word being, without being reduced to that word, to it, the linguistics that works for the deconstruction of the constituted unity of that word has only in fact, or in principle, have the question of being posed in order to define its field and the order of its dependence. And this emphasis is in the original. Inasmuch as the question of being unites indissolubly with the presumption of the word being. So the very question of being is indissoluble with the precomposition of the word being. The word being brings in the possibility of being. Without being reduced to the word, the linguistics that works for the deconstruction of the constituted unity of that word being has only in fact or in principle to have the question of being posed in order to define its field and the order of its dependence. Well, let's see if we can figure this out, because I can't explicate this on its own. We have to go further, and that's typical of this kind of writing. You can't stop. You have to keep going. Thus, linguistics escapes the field of being, the ontological or metaphysics. That is, now we get to the point where language is able to be seen outside of the epoch of logos or metaphysics. Because metaphysics came into being vis-a-vis language, now we can see language can then thus detach itself from metaphysics and stand independent of it. Not only is its field no longer simply ontic, or one might say ontological, but the limits of ontology that correspond to it no longer have anything regional about them. Okay. That is to say, it is no longer limited to the ontic, but the limits of ontology that correspond to it are not regional. That is, language has escaped both regionality and the ontological. That's how I read that. Being is produced only through the logos and is nothing outside of it, he says. The difference between signified and signified signifier is nothing. That is not to say there is no signifier, but it is to say there is no signified outside of the signifier. That is not to say that with language we are reaching being, but rather Western metaphysics is produced as the domination of a linguistic form. That's my emphasis. Western metaphysics is produced as the domination of a linguistic form. This linguistic form produces metaphysics. Language is what produced transcendentality itself. The very idea of transcendental object, world, anything that is not breached and known completely, is produced by language, by the sign. Now, he says, with Heidegger, a new writing is born. So you might mark Heidegger as the beginning of this epoch of writing. Heidegger, he says, lets the word being be read only if it is crossed out. So Heidegger wrote being in German, of course, and crossed it out, but left the word visible underneath the crossed out, the crossing out. Why? The deletion is the final writing of an epoch, of the epoch of logos. This is the end point. Under its strokes, the presence of a transcendental signified is effaced. While still remaining legible, you can see it, but it's gone. It's defaced. It's there, but it's crossed out. It is effaced while still remaining legible. It's destroyed while making visible the very idea of the sign. Inasmuch as it delimits ontotheology, the metaphysics of presence and logocentrism, this last writing is also the first writing. This is the last writing of the epoch of the sign or of logos or of metaphysics, and the first writing of the epoch of writing. Thus, being is not a transcendental or trans-epochal signified. It is rather a determined signifying trace. It is a trace of the signifier. And this is a key idea here, that being is only a matter of trace, a trace left by the signifier, by the signifying system. Being, thus, is a derivative with regard to difference. Okay, being merely comes into being as by virtue of the difference between signifiers. And with respect to what I shall later call difference, which I mentioned, difference plus deferral. There's an endless difference in language, and there's an endless deferral of meaning. Language is an endlessly differing system which constantly defers ultimate meaning, meaning you can't arrive at it. One should wonder at this point just what Derrida is getting at, certainly, if not before now. Let's see if we can unravel it. In deconstructing the metaphysics of presence, as he calls it, what is Derrida saying about what Saussure called the referent of language? I think this is the key question, and the question around which most of the criticism of Derrida revolves. Recall that, and as I said, we'd bring this slide back in. Recall that in Saussure's formulation, language works as follows. Signifier, word, signified, concept, together making a sign which point to a referent, object, or ontology being referred to. In showing that the signified being is the construction of the sign, is Derrida implying something about the referent? That's the question. One must wade through hundreds of pages for the answer, and I believe the answer is yes. He is saying something about the referent. That is, the ontologies, the ontological world, the realm of being itself, not just the signified or the conceptual idea of being, but being. The referent is absent. Okay? This is why he says the methodological considerations that we risk applying here to an example are closely dependent on general propositions that we have elaborated above. As regards the absence of the referent or the transcendental signified. So here he's collapsed the signified and the referent. He has conflated them. There is nothing outside of the text, he writes. Let me repeat. There is nothing outside of the text. And then he brackets this. There is no outside text. Okay? There is no outside text. So he both says there is nothing outside of the text, and then he says there is no outside text, as if to say that the statement there is nothing outside of the text is the same as saying there is no outside text. But they're not the same. One, the first statement, is suggesting that there's no referent outside of the text. Even the signified is absorbed into the text, but so is the referent as well. The absence of the referent, or the transcendental signified, he conflates them. There is nothing outside of the text. Then he says there's no outside text. There's no alternate outside text outside of the text of language. Well, we already kind of knew that, I guess, unless there's a hieroglyphics in the sky. Notice, though, the conflation of the referent and the transcendental signified here. The absence of the referent or the transcendental signified. He's conflating them. There is nothing outside of the text. There is no outside text, and then the French. Here we must be clear. Derrida might be claiming that there is nothing that can be said about what lies outside of the text, for whatever is outside of text is not language, after all, and whatever isn't language can't be said, as it were. That might be all he's saying. That, in fact, that there is no outside text or there is nothing outside of the text means that you can't say anything about what's outside of the text because you have no language, because there is no language outside of language. What is not language is not language. If that's all he's saying, that would be a rather unremarkable claim, I think. That we can't say anything without some kind of language or sign system, and that whatever can't be said is outside of text. So what? If that's all he's saying, this is a long book to get there. I don't believe that's all he's saying. Derrida continues, there has never been anything but writing. There have never been anything but supplements, the means by which words differentiate themselves from other words. Substitutive significations which could only come forth in a chain of differential references. The real supervening and being added only while taking on meaning from a trace and from an invocation of the supplement, etc. And thus to infinity. For we have read in the text that the absolute presence, nature, that which words like real mother name have always already escaped, have never existed, that what opens meaning and language is writing as the disappearance of natural presence. What I read here is that writing is the disappearance of natural presence, but there's never been anything but writing. Now, how does writing work? It works by virtue of supplements, that is, the means by which words are differentiated from themselves. Like, if you might think of supplement as a tag, put on a word, put on like a word unit, like a neutered word unit, and if you add a tag, it becomes something particular. And then each word has a different tag, or has more than one tag, or has different sort of like flagellum or something, flagella that differentiated from other words or something like that. I think visually a lot of times here. And that being itself comes only by virtue of the difference between these various supplements, like the friction produced by the difference of the supplements produces being. And thus to infinity, into infinity, that there's an endless difference. And that is part of difference. And there's a deferral of meaning because you can't ever reach it because difference is endless. Therefore, such things as nature, that which words like real mother name have always already escaped, have never existed, he says. I mean, there it is. Language is writing as the disappearance of natural presence, but there has never been anything but writing. That is, presence is a function of the sign. Meaning comes only through language, and the endless difference/difference of language signifier signifies with each other. The presence of the referent is produced by these endless differences. The presence of the referent is produced by these endless differences. This is the self-identity of the text with itself. Thus it would appear that the charge of extreme skepticism with which Derrida has been charged about an ontology outside of text has some merit. That is, he's been charged with a total nihilism with reference to the ontological world by saying there's nothing but language, or there's no outside of text, or there's nothing outside of the text. I'm not going to answer the question, but I'm going to say the charge of extreme skepticism is warranted because of the statements that he makes and the fishy conflation of the referent and the signified. He accomplished all this by means of a linguistic deconstruction of metaphysics, by a deconstruction of the sign, or his observation of this, as he would say, and smuggled along with this deconstruction a deconstruction of the sign-referent relationship itself. He conflates referent and signified at various points and critical points, such that he seems to be making the object world disappear into language. The referent, too, appears to be a function of the sign. Those who deny this about Derrida are simply not faithful to the text. I hope you gather the irony there. I will save critical conclusions about Derrida and postmodernism in general for my concluding remarks about postmodern theory and all of the schools we have treated thus far. Thank you very much.